already given him the big build-up. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend Tony Gosling. Welcome back, T.
Hi, Richie. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. You're clear as a bell. We will talk Sudan in a few minutes' time. We then might talk about Zinedine Zidane. I don't know, but a couple of things I want to... Before we get into Diane Abbott, Tucker Carlson is leaving Fox News. Mutually agreed between Fox and Tucker Carlson. Now, many of the listeners to the Not the BCFM Politics Show in Bristol, or some of them anyway, will have a bit of sympathy with Tucker Carlson because they will feel that he has been on the right side of some important issues like the vaccine injuries and, of course, on the identity politics, the transgender stuff. But Carlson was found to be telling people not to report the fact that Dominion's voting machines were not in any way rigged at all. It turns out that Carlson knew this, that they were not rigged, but he went on the air and said the opposite because it's good for Fox's bottom line. I suppose this is a lesson, isn't it, to people who consume the independent media. Stop falling for people like Tucker Carlson. What say you, Tony?
Well, no, I don't. I totally disagree. I think he's been booted out because he's been one of the best journalists in the United States, in the world, actually. In terms of breaking, I mean, okay, so Steve Hilton was doing it too, but breaking the stories about the Wuhan lab, Peter Daszak, the gain of function research being funded by the Pentagon, the links at the top level between the US deep state and China. I mean, he's been doing that better than anyone else. And he's also, if you remember, about a year and a half ago, he was being intimidated by the National Security Agency. I think it was some guy speaking to him one-to-one saying that, you know, we are spying on you, basically. We're listening and everything that's on your phone and that kind of thing. No, I mean, he's been a target of the deep state and it's just another head that's rolled, just like Dominic Raab, for example, last week.
Hang on. While it might be true that Carlson has debated and discussed issues germane to people like us, right, and has done that, it is also true, because it has emerged and he hasn't denied it, he told people working in that organisation to shut a journalist up when she was talking about the Dominion story because it would affect Fox News' bottom line. You see, I speak to you once a month and have been doing for years because you have integrity. It doesn't matter what you have done previously in your career. The minute you are found to be burying a story and intimidating a reporter because she's telling the truth, because it might affect Fox's bottom line, you're finished, Tony.
No, because if you're working for a big network like that, I would say the fine that they got from Dominion is, I think it was out of court settlement anyway, was, if I'm right, it's $780 million.
Yeah.
Right. So this is a lot of money. And I think if you know, it's easy for you or I, who are just freelancers working for ourselves, it's easy. But for someone who's working for a network, if your network is having to deal with a lawsuit, then for whatever reason, you know, you have to understand that there are other interests at stake. This is why I think you and I both, you know, haven't really survived with these big networks. It's because you're having to compromise all the time. But I mean, I think when you're dealing with a mass lawsuit like that, Richie, of course you're going to have to cut your cloth a little bit, because otherwise the entire network suffers because you can't. I mean, I think, say for example, when there's an ongoing court case.
Yeah, but hang on. Let me hang on. Let me put this another way. We've got all the time that you've got yourself, so you'll get plenty of time where you won't be interrupted. Let me put this another way. This is a fact, I believe. When Carlson realised that the claims against the Dominion machines were false and that the machines were not rigged, rather than report that, he continued to report nonsense, saying that the machines were rigged, and had a journalist intimidated because, well, shut her up, will you? I mean, this affects the bottom line. A journalist will go on the air and will say, do you know what, dear listener or dear viewer, I've been telling you what I believe to be true for several months or for 18 months. I believe those machines were rigged against Donald Trump, but now I found out they weren't, so I apologise. What did Carson do? Try to cover it up. I've no interest in him, Tony.
Well, it's an error of judgment. I think we all make errors of judgment. But anyway, maybe he's been given a better offer. Who knows? On a different network. Some.
No, good. Look, listen, your point of view will be shared by probably more listeners than mine will. The great Tony Gosling is on the BCFM Politics, not the BCFM Politics show, Fridays at 5 o'clock out of Bristol. It is essential listening. What about Diane Abbott then? What did she say, Tony, as far as you understand it?
Look, again, she's been talking. We covered Dominic Raab and Tony, can't remember his second name, CBI chief last week. There are basically people being bounced out of all sorts of, you know, and Diane is just another one, as Jeremy Corbyn being bounced out of the Labour Party. Look, we are witnessing, I think, a decapitation of democracy in all sorts of different ways. So people who are prepared to speak out, Raab most definitely was. I mean, I think the whole thing last week was about Brexit, really, nothing to do with anything else. He's also an independent-minded person like you and I that has his own points of view and it will express them. He, for example, said that the Royal Navy and the Defence Secretary and Boris Johnson wanting to sail a British destroyer towards Russian waters in Crimea was a stupid idea, and they marked his cards, I think, for him speaking out like that. With Diane Abbott, she's quite clearly a genuine socialist who is also not an internationalist. She's not a globalist. She's, I wouldn't say a great cheerleader for the UK, but she doesn't buy into a lot of their stuff, and she's not doesn't buy into the City of London, which the rest of the Labour Party Starmer particularly does. And so she's been singled out and she's been purged. Now, this is what Jeremy Corbyn should have done while he was in power. He should have identified all these Mandelsonian Labour MPs who are globalists and don't really give a fig, like our MPs here in Bristol, for the general population. They're just interested in their careers. And he should have got rid of them, but he didn't do that. Now Starmer is doing what he should have done, but with all the decent people in the Labour Party, one by one are being identified and rooted out. It's as simple as that.
You believe it's as simple as that? What about this element of, I read the letter she wrote to The Observer, and it seemed to me like she was hinting at the Jews as a race question. You know, the Jews are not a race, and the Jewish people wouldn't experience prejudice in the same way as black people would, people from Afro-Caribbean backgrounds or from African backgrounds. That seems to be the crux of it there. Is that why so many Jewish commentators and Jewish journalists have come out of the woodwork today to demand that she basically disappears into oblivion in retirement?
Look, so the nub of the issue is this whole idea of the hierarchy of discrimination.
Yeah.
Right? So what we get generally is that the most discriminated against people in the world are Jews. And this is the most dangerous form of discrimination coming. And I honestly think that we should not be discriminating against anybody, that we should judge each person as an individual. But what's going on here is she's saying, well, there's all sorts of other groups in society that get similar treatment to anti-Semitism. And so the people who are pushing the whole anti-Semitic agenda are saying, well, she's trivializing anti-Semitism. The whole thing is worthy of a discussion, perhaps. But the idea that to raise these things is some sort of a crime is insane. It's ridiculous. And that's why I say she's just being purged, Richie. That's my opinion. She's just been identified as someone that thinks for herself. And we can't have that under Starmer. Let's not forget, right, that Starmer was the guy that signed off the prosecution of Julian Assange. He was the one that threw in the bin the prosecution of Jimmy Savile. This guy, of course, is just a tool. He's just an operator, now has managed to infiltrate and is now leading the Labour Party. There is no opposition in Britain anymore. And anybody that starts to think of views which might oppose the ruling Rishi Sunak and, you know, the rest of them, is purged and got rid of and, you know, is seen as a threat. Now, actually, in the Britain that I grew up in, those people with views like Diane Abbott's are nurtured and they are made, it's made sure that their views which oppose the ruling class are, or ruling elite, are nurtured and fostered and actually encouraged in the voices in Parliament. And so we, I mean, we're seeing, basically, she is a thought criminal. That's what she is in terms of George Orwell in 1984. She has been booted out for a thought crime.
And there is a, also going along with this, or I mentioned this earlier on, it is also about engineering society, isn't it? It's about engineering and changing society and teaching a lesson to people that if you don't parrot the establishment version of events on any given issue, the consequences for you could be very, very severe indeed. I see a lot of that going on. To me, that's one of the big takeouts from this. It's saying to people, look what happens when you say something that we deem to be unsayable. You'll very quickly find yourself isolated, piled on by the media, both the social media and the legacy media, and you'll be out of a job quicker than you can say, what time is dinner, right? So there is engineering going on, really.
Yeah, it's all the characteristics of dictatorship.
Yeah.
What you get is you get a dictator and everybody around them has got to mimic their views. Otherwise, they get stuck in the dungeon. I mean, that really is literally where we're. It's this kind of medieval style feudal system that we seem to be being forced back into. It's barbaric. And, you know, of course, Diane Abbott should be all over the various media this evening giving her views if the media was doing its job, but it's course it's not, and they will be talking about her but not really allowing her to express her opinion, her points of view. And I mean, if you look at the I mean, just as an example, here in Bristol, the Labour Party has been in power. Now what's happening is all of this just plays into the hands of the Greens. The Greens are going to do well in the local elections as a result of this, even though, of course, the local elections really shouldn't be about national politics. It is. So the Labour Party is, you know, committing suicide. I mean, I also say another little, because I have a contact, very good contact in the Civil Service Union, the PCS, and he was telling me recently that the Tory party don't want to win the next election. They're actually, I mean, of course, this makes sense if you look at what they're doing, is they want the Labour Party to win, and that the Labour Party will then have to deal with, like Gordon Brown did in 2008, an enormous financial disaster. The reason the Tories don't want to win is because they don't want to have to carry the can for all these ridiculous policies over the last decade or so, and they'd much rather it all falls in Labour's lap. So this, I think, is the cynical level to which we've dropped nowadays, and it explains a lot of the Tories' policies. If you think, well, actually, maybe they'd much rather lose the next election and let Labour suffer the economic crash on them.
Yeah, of course, Brown took over from Tony Blair, and they'd been in power since 1997, so any financial problems at the Treasury you could lay squarely at the feet of Blair and his cabinet. Tony Gosling is our guest. I'm fascinated, Tony. Thisweek.org.uk, dear listener. Also check out Bilderberg.org. Listen to Tony on Fridays at 5 o'clock UK time. Interviewees are brilliant. Talking points, fantastic. And it's an interactive program too. So check it out. I haven't a Scooby-Doo what's going on in Sudan, but it is important for listeners who maybe been following this or listeners who haven't been following it. Since last week or 10 days ago, fighting has been going on in Sudan. The Sudanese army is fighting the RSF paramilitary force. Two generals basically vying for power in Sudan. There are 4,000 UK citizens in that country. We've heard a lot today on the news about efforts to evacuate not just the British nationals, but also European nationals out of Sudan. And you got my attention today. You think that this is a bigger story than most think it is, and there is a Russian angle to this. What's going on there, do you think?
Well, it most definitely is. I mean, I think we're looking at the international coverage of it in the Western press has studiously avoided this threat that the Americans issued about a month ago to the Sudanese government and to the Russians, saying if you pursue this idea of having a
a Russian seaport at Port Sudan. And this is, I mean, Port Sudan is, I think it's about 90% of the trade in and out of Sudan goes through there. And the Sudanese government has agreed with the Russians to build a port there. So the Americans start getting a bit annoyed about that, yeah? And I think that's as simple as that. That's what this
so
is
the,
about.
So the paramilitary force... Yeah, you went a little bit echoey there for a minute. So the paramilitary force in Sudan at war at the moment with the Sudanese army, this paramilitary force is being funded by Western intelligence agencies? It's being armed?
Almost certainly the Americans behind it. Yeah, I mean, this isn't what they do. It's an organization called AFRICOM. People can look it up. I think it's based in Stuttgart in Germany, which is a part of the unified command structure of the whole world by the United States. It's where they have these command centers, which apparently command everywhere, including China. And all the various covert operations and military interventions go through there. So I think if you were to be in Stuttgart today, you would hear a lot of conversations in a building all about what you know, the intervention there and how they're trying to make sure that... I mean, what they basically say to the government is, look, if you decide you want to try and pursue this, you're going to regret it. It's a bit like the mafia holding a gun to your head and saying, look, if you decide you want to... you know, open this casino here, then, you know, you're going to get a bullet in the head. And that's basically the way that the US operates.
The BBC is reporting that a British military team, they're calling it small, has landed in Sudan to assess potential evacuation options. This is not going to be as big as the evacuation of Afghanistan, is it? But it might be serious.
Well, it is serious. I mean, the thing is that these countries are not allowed any kind of independence. And as soon as they start doing deals with a power which is hostile to the empire, then they find that, there's a whole bunch of lunatics with guns running around on the streets. I'd like to see this kind of thing dealt with by people like the UN. But, you know, the UN doesn't have – it's more interested in, you know, zero carbon and climate change, it seems, than anything else these days. So, I mean, I don't know if your listeners can see it, but it's on there, a really good article about this American threat to the Sudanese government a few weeks ago on Middle East Eye. And I remember reading it thinking, oh, what's going on here? And then, of course, you see it flare up in the news a few weeks later. Suddenly there's just war on the streets. But it's not a civil war. This is a war between superpowers using Khartoum as their playground.
And we expect the UK media and the global media will report this as they did with Syria. They will report this as a civil war when it isn't. It's an attempted coup.
Exactly. And what they hate is when people start to understand how geopolitics works. The fact that there are really only three or four major empires on the planet. And although the countries are nominally independent, that you have to really nowadays be part of one of these big empires in order to just not get the heat, you know, from one of the other ones. So I think independent countries are almost, you know, kind of, I mean, look at Britain, for example, you know, we have got no independence from the US really at all. I mean, there's all sorts of things going on here. I mean, all this push for, you know, even going back to Dominic Raab and him being pushed out, this is part of a EU-US agenda of the empire against Russia. And, you know, if somebody starts to speak out in a, you know, serious political position in any of these countries, then they will be noted and they will be slowly targeted. It might even take, as it's taken with Raab, a couple of years for him to actually be booted out. And of course, he will now be part of a, you know, rebel faction within the Conservative Party that may try and topple Sunak. But there's a calculation been made that actually, no, Sunak's pretty well embedded now, and he can ride it out to the next election when the Tories will probably be out anyway.
I could buy this story that is being spun by Raab and by some of his supporters, the story that the civil service has been infiltrated by a group of Remoaners and their aim is to stifle the government or to, you know, stop the government, prevent the government from doing its business. I could buy into that, except for the UK hasn't left the European Union in any meaningful sense anyway, which I think you would agree with.
No, look, You're right. Yes, you're right. I mean, Brexit has so far pretty much failed. But that doesn't mean to say that there aren't people that want us. For example, I was just reading today, Britain is going to have to go back into the single market. And that is, you know, supposedly inevitable. Now, this is exactly what, you know, Eugenia Millers and the Remainers wanted in the first place. But of course, we should be outside that. You know, we can't have European courts ruling on what we can and cannot make and do and manufacture here and trade, etc. That means that you're ceding your trade policy to Brussels. And, you know, the whole point of Brexit is that you're actually, I mean, I still think we should be trying to have an independent nation. We shouldn't be just bending over for Brussels. And I only see Brussels as really just part of the American empire. I don't see it. I mean, if you look around the world in the various disputes, say, for example, with Iran and things like that, you're basically getting good cop, bad cop, with the Americans being very forceful and, you know, kicking and rude and threatening, whereas the Europeans being quite sort of, you know, conciliatory. But at the end of the day, they're both working very closely together. And the, you know, the United States of Europe was put together by the War and Peace Studies Group of the Council on Foreign Relations back in World War II. That was the whole project, was put together that long ago. So this whole idea of, you know, we will. I mean, I don't know if you remember that guy, what was his name? Otto von Habsburg. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
He said during the time of Brexit, he actually did a press release, it might even still be up online, where he said, oh, it's very entertaining watching the Brits try to leave because we know we're not going to let them. They can't. Look, you know, he said it was like watching a reality TV show.
And Boris and the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson was every bit as much of a Europhile as his predecessor Theresa May was. The whole thing was a big farce. I remember arguing with somebody who had the courage to come on, it was a politician, I can't remember, back in 2016, about the last time a politician had any courage in coming on a programme like this. And I remember saying to the politician who tried to patronise me by saying that diplomacy doesn't work like this, I said, of course diplomacy works like this. When the threats were being made after the UK had voted to leave, and when threats were being made by Brussels, you know, about let's trigger Article 50 and let's have 2 years of negotiation, it would have been pretty simple for the UK Prime Minister to say, listen, here's how it goes. You sell into our country more than we sell into the European Union. You won't be playing any funny games now that we've left with tariffs and stuff, because if you do, we will reciprocate. It is as simple as that. That's how it should have worked, Tony. Very simple. We're out. We're completely out. There are no ties whatsoever. If you want to play silly tariff games, we'll roll up your sleeves. We'll go and speak to the heads of Mercedes. We'll go and speak to the owners of the French vineyards, and they will kill you when we tell them that the reason we are putting tariffs on your produce is because Brussels is doing it to us. That's how simple it could have been, Tony.
Well, it also could have been that the UK actually started to prepare by actually starting to be more self-sufficient.
Yes.
In all sorts of things, like whether that's energy, food, whatever. And that didn't happen. There's been no attempt to do that. There's been no strategy from central government, from the Tories, to do that at all. And of course, that's part of the problem, isn't it? That they've engineered it so that we're still absolutely dependent on foreign trade. And you know who isn't? Putin, Russia, they are not dependent on foreign trade. They're not even dependent on China. They have made sure that they've got all the basics that their people need to survive and to have a successful manufacturing economy domestically. And they've made sure that all that's, I mean, for example, we've got this ridiculous idea, haven't we, of closing down all of our coal mines. Now, you know, Britain's coal, we've got trillions of tons of coal under the ground, enough to last between 2,000 and 3,000 years, and yet we've switched it all off voluntarily. So where are we going to get our energy from? Nuclear? Oh, well, you're going to have to source that uranium from somewhere abroad.
Unless
there's a uranium mine in, I don't know, in Cumbria. We have to dig up the Lake District or something. But look, you know, if we're not going to take it seriously, the idea that, you know, you need to be as independent in raw materials, natural resources, and basic, you know, necessities for life in your own country, then, you know, you're I suppose this whole thing with the single market is almost bound to come knocking on your door after a few years. Everyone is blaming Brexit for much of the, you know, the country's economic woes. But at the end of the day, the economy has been deliberately steered into this dead end because of things like, I mean, since the whole thing of COVID, hundreds of thousands of businesses going bust during COVID. People like Amazon, the big international companies, doing really well. So I think what's happened is the international global elite, if you want the Bilderbergers in the West, have actually, they're now in control of the British economy, and they're not going to let go of it anytime soon. They want to make sure that we're dependent on foreign trade and them for everything.
For everything.
They're trying to deprive the population of the ability to even earn a living. And so we're dependent on, you know, money from the government and that sort of thing as much as possible. So that's where I think we are. We don't really have a government. What we do have, though, is a City of London that is getting stronger by the day, and particularly through its control of the Labour Party opposition.
You will be happy owning nothing, says Klaus Schwab. Let me ask you this. Tony Gosling is our guest, thisweek.org.uk, not the BCFM politics show. Outstanding radio. I mean it. 5 o'clock on Fridays. I was away last week. If I had been on air last week, I would have been phoning you to ask you to come on, because this is a massive story. It might have come up on your show on Friday, but I didn't hear your show on Friday because I was on holiday. But let me read this. This is an astounding story, and it goes to the heart of the climate change scam as I see it. I'm not putting words in Tony's mouth. Farmer jailed for dredging stretch of river to stop homes from flooding. This is the Telegraph newspaper last week. John Price spent 200 hours removing gravel and silt from an area of River Lug in Herefordshire. He began doing this in late 2020 because he and his fellow villagers were sick to death of that river bursting its banks and flooding and destroying their houses and causing all manner of bloody damages. But the environmental agency took him to court and he's been found guilty. Right, of crimes against the environment, and he's been sent to prison for a year in order to pay £600,000 in costs. He had the complete support of everybody in the village of Kingsland, which had been hit by storms and as I said, the river rising and breaking its banks. You and I spoke about this many years ago. You will remember this when we first started speaking about how very dubious European Union regulations had prevented rivers from being dredged as they used to be dredged since time immemorial to prevent this.
Yeah.
This poor bastard, because they wouldn't do it, didn't take the law into his own hands. He did the right thing and he's going to jail. This is a massive story.
Well, yeah, brilliant. Thanks for bringing it up because it is a very important tale. I mean, we do remember, though, the Environment Agency could have sent a hitman in and blown his brains out and done it legally because they are now above the law. It's this law that was passed about 18 months, 2 years ago with no opposition from Labour that says that MI5, MI6, the police and other government agencies, including the Environment Agency, can murder people and then they get impunity from prosecution in the courts. So I suppose he should be thinking himself lucky that he didn't do that.
Is that right? Now, is that right?
It's right. It's no. Absolutely right. The Environment Agency is one of those agencies.
One of those groups that can do this.
Now allowed to break the law with impunity.
Jesus Christ.
Including murder, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this is another sort of preparation for a dictatorship. Let me just say a few things about the Environment Agency. I was having a walk out in the countryside the other day, and I noticed my monitoring station sort of in the way, and I, you know, took a couple of photos of it, but it was in a very dreadful state of disrepair. It said Environment Agency on it, and it had a little aerial. A solar panel on the top, which was rusted and broken and useless. So this is the Environment Agency. I also, during the flooding of the Somerset Levels about 8 years ago, I went down there to have a look. The Environment Agency were in charge of that. And the failure to dredge the reams, which are the draining ditches down there, was all due to the Environment Agency's regulations and their fact that they hadn't been bothering to do it. And they thought it's going to actually be good for wildlife if we don't dredge, blah, blah, wading birds and things like that. And then there was a massive flood. Well, look, the Environment Agency's sluice gate. So if you imagine, you know, what it's like down there, you've got all these drains running right across the levels down into the sea, into the Bristol Channel. We stood there and had a look at this drain, and it was at low, medium, low tide, and the drain was closed. So it wasn't even letting the water out from the levels into the sea at the time when all the flooding was going on. So I did a little film of that, which did very well on YouTube, with some annoying music in the background. But anyway, the point is the Environment Agency are not doing their job. So what's happened here is they're supposed to be draining the levels. The Environment Agency were not draining the levels. Once upon a time when that was put in there, you probably find that it was a local people's job to actually go down there when there was flooding and make sure that the drain was open. So they aren't doing their job at all. They are, I would say, accelerationist, dark enlightenment organization, which is doing its best to sabotage humanity. And, of course, they're doing exactly the same with this. If you're part of the Environment Agency, you can do these things. You can go and, dig something. But they just want everything kind of left. And they're not – so they're completely not fit for purpose. It would be better if of course, it's awful that this guy has been targeted in this way. And it shows you that we're not living in a democracy. We're living in a dictatorship, Richie.
It's horrendous. The Environment Agency, according to The Telegraph, has faced massive criticism in recent years for the lackadaisical approach to flood prevention, as you've just described already, moving away from dredging, which farmers have been screaming about for years, saying it's a hugely important tool. It's really the only way to stop this kind of thing happening. The Environment Agency says this, right? It says that there are 6 protected and endangered species, including the common otter and the white-clawed crayfish, and that by dredging the river, you will destroy their habitats and ruin one of the country's most unspoiled rivers. So what about those who might say, well, they have a point there?
He's not just dredged it. What he's done, I don't know if you've seen the pictures there.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures.
What he's done is he's cleared a lot of the fallen trees that have fallen. Now, the Environment Agency say, this is great. We need fallen trees falling into our rivers, blocking the rivers, so because it's a great habitat for badgers. Not sorry, badgers, beavers.
Beavers,
right? This kind of nonsense. So it depends. If you think that a beaver's much more important than a farmer, then make sure you create a situation which might encourage beavers. Not that there's actually any beavers around there, but I mean, what he's done is he's seen the neglect over decades that the Environment Agency's left. There used to be something called the Rivers Authority. They closed that down and subsumed into this useless, Chris Smith ran it, didn't he, for a while, the Environment Agency. And their job really is just to leave everything. It's just to do nothing, really. And anyone that actually starts to do the sensible thing, which is to manage the land, if you bother to go around the country and keep your eyes open by the sides of the roads, you'll see all over the place now, loads and loads of trees have been taken down. And some will say it's just ash. No, it's not. A lot of it is because there's a massive market opened up for timber to go into Drax Power Station to replace the coal to generate electricity. So a lot of this stuff is just being wood chipped. Some of it's being obviously sold as timber. What he's done is he's chopped a whole load of trees down, which is sort of thing which is going on all over the country now with total impunity for money to feed this green agenda, which I think is totally ridiculous. The idea that you should be, it's talked about, and I think we said this last time in that Planet of the Humans, very good film with Michael Moore. Well, Michael Moore financed it and helped produce it, where this green agenda is being hijacked, basically, by maniacs who think that it's a good idea to feed our trees into Drax Power Station. And yet, as soon as he starts to manage the woodland in that way, I think he's actually rooted out a lot of the trees because he's saying, well, look, it's actually better not to have trees here because then we don't have to manage it anymore. He's managing his land and he's being jailed and fined for his pleasure. So it's absolutely disgusting and appalling. But it's not the first time that he's a livestock farmer, so they don't like livestock farmers. Let's just target this guy and make an example of him. Now, and I'm really glad you brought that up because it's a massive environmental story and it shows you just how ridiculous and hypocritical and dictatorial the Environment Agency are, because I mean the farmers are much better. Just think about the way we operate as a society. What we do is we allow people to just get on and do the stuff, and then the government the government can kind of get involved if something goes horribly wrong. Here, they're saying, you just do as we say. It's a bit like what's been going on in our schools. They're getting diktats from the top the whole time. And if you start thinking for yourself, which is by far the best way that human beings function, with trust. So I suppose this is another part of this kind of zero trust world that we're moving into, where you just do as you're told. If you start thinking for yourself, you're going to be thrown in jail.
And the farmer being sent to prison is a tyranny. And this rivers bursting their banks because of a lack of management through the dredging that was done for forever. This, of course, definitely suits the climate agenda, doesn't it? Because it is inevitably blamed every time we have a river bursting its banks. Every time Kay Burley puts the galoshes on and the wellies on and runs down with the cameras to cover this, it is painted as, well, this is climate change. This is what we have to expect in the coming years, right?
Well, it's the countryside is for wild animals. It's not for farmers or growing food or for living in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's certainly the lesson that came out from the flooding of the Somerset levels. And the idea is that nature is better at managing itself. If we try and drain this low-lying land, then we're interfering in nature. So there is a sort of, I suppose, pantheistic, animist element to this, where the thinking that's behind this is anti-human. It's actually anti-human. It's saying humans are not compatible with nature. Let's just let nature run its course. And when humans start to intervene in a way that we don't like, or that we haven't sanctioned, that we're going to wade in and we're going to throw them in prison, find them out of existence.
And that inevitably leads to mega cities, doesn't it? Human settlement zones where the countryside is basically deemed a no-go area. People will be moved away from the coasts, away from the country and into these human settlement zones that we've been talking about for so many years on programmes like this. That's the inevitable. Let me read a couple of quick comments. We've got about 5 minutes left today. Thanks for coming on today, pal. I didn't tell our listeners that Tony came on as a bit of an emergency. A guest who was due to be with me today had to cry off around about lunchtime, and Tony very kindly jumped in, which is brilliant, pulling me out of one there today. Backbeat says, I do hope the people of the village of Kingsland put their hands in their pockets to help him. Maybe Backbeat means to pay the legal bills. Jesus, £600,000. Patrick says, the Western neocons are at it again with Sudan, which is one of the objectives for hegemonic control and regime change cited in the project for the new American century, which was launched back in 1997. Craig asks, are we sure that Britain is subservient to America and not the other way around? If I recall my history correctly, King Charles is related to the Habsburgs, and the Habsburgs were once the emperors of the Holy Roman Empire, otherwise known as the Second Reich, and the Holy Roman Empire had control over Britain's trade. And what powerful banking family do we know who became the custodians of the wealth of the Holy Roman Empire? That's Craig. That's an interesting point there, Craig. And William says, Tony thinks the UK is controlled by the US, but others, like Dean Henderson, they reckon it's the other way around. The reality is, no single nation has control. That's the job of the hidden hand. Interesting takes on these. And Faisal says, didn't the COVID scam expose that there is really only one global empire, with a few countries out to favour, the few countries being Russia and others? And that's a good point, because the lockstep approach to COVID, you know, kind of suggested that really the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, that's where maybe the power really lies. What say you, Tony?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, so from really good points, especially the one about the Habsburgs. I think there is a satanic aristocracy out there. And these are people, basically, I think, I don't know how, if your listeners are familiar with the way that satanic thinking works. And it's really not about worshipping Lucifer or Satan. It's about worshipping yourself. So the idea is there is no God, but you are God. I mean, I'm talking about popping into my mind is someone like Elon Musk, you know, who really does think that he's the great genius who can help the world move forward. And so that is essentially their thinking. But there's, I think, for a long time, certainly since the 1700s, been an organized aristocracy around the Holy Roman emperors and people like that, which, I mean, that's kind of gone in and out of existence. So it went underground as well. The this element of aristocracy, I think, is incredibly arrogant. I mean, they basically, when they're born into that world, they know that they're never going to want for anything anymore. They have more wealth than they could ever spend. They have more land than they could ever see. And so that excess of wealth then leads to a power trip, basically, and also often heroin addiction. Where, you know, they've got plenty of money to spend as much on heroin as they want. But anyway, the point being that there's a sort of counter aristocracy as well, not anywhere near as strong, but also people who have, you know, grown up in that world around Europe who've understood that a lot of power does come from land. And that, one of the things I've noticed over the years, chatting with farmers who own their own farms, is that they're marvelously independent minded. And I think that happens when you've got a bit of land and you've got yourself sufficient, you know, and I love those sorts of people who just will not take any BS from anybody. And we're becoming a landless society where people don't have the security to be able to speak up because they'll be hoofed out of their home potentially. And I would like, that's the sort of society I'd like to see, Richie, is the sort of thing that happened with the, in Ireland actually, with the removal of empire and with the removal of the absentee landowners. You suddenly got a peasantry who owned their own land, or only small plots, many of them, and they owned their own home. And so they were really genuinely independent-minded. They had, for example, the time to rest their arm on the gate at the cottage and chit-chat with anybody, because they had the time of day to spend with people. They weren't rushed off their feet trying to earn a crust as part of a, you know, kind of system of wage slavery anymore. And that I think is at the root of a lot of this, you know, the World Economic Forum. You know, this is a child of this aristocracy, this greedy aristocracy, and they just think to themselves, well, we are so powerful, they think of themselves as gods, we can do what we want, and so let's turn Europe into our little people farm. We can farm these little people, get them working for us, and if they don't, we can bump them off. They see it almost as a giant farm for them to play with. This is, I think, actually what Orwell was talking about when he wrote Animal Farm, you know. So who's really in charge? I think it's most definitely the US. Just look at the amount of wealth which is being funneled from Europe now because of these crazy energy deals and the up of the price of energy over to the United States. The United States seems to me to be where all this European wealth is now going as a result of the for example, all the military equipment that's been sent to Ukraine is being replaced by, not by British tanks, but by, we are now looking at buying American tanks. So, you just have to look at where the money's going to figure out where the real power is.
Brilliant today, Tony. Thanks for jumping in last minute to chat with us. Let me remind you, dear listener, Tony is also an author. Check out his books at thisweek.org.uk. I've mentioned them many times in the programme. I'll mention them again in the future. The not the BCFM Politics show on Fridays at 5 o'clock is a must listen. Check it out if you haven't before. I'm sure you have. Thanks for your time today, buddy. Really appreciate it. And no doubt we'll be chatting again real soon.
Yeah, just one thing. We'll be doing a show this week, I hope, from the Conference of the National Union of Journalists in central London, which there'll be, I think, zero other coverage of it anywhere else. It's, I think, at TUC headquarters on Thursday, Friday and Saturday. So I'm going to be hopefully doing the show from there and reporting on some of the things. I mean, it's amazing to see that Julian Assange does not appear on the list of motions being debated at the conference, even though there's a motion on international journalists in jail. Julian Assange isn't mentioned once. So my branch have got an amendment in adding Julian Assange into that motion and saying that he should get life membership from the National Union of Journalists too.
Good man. And just on that, what is known of his health at the moment, Julian Assange?
Well, I don't know any more than you do, Richie. Of course, you know, I'm not sure if he's still on medication. Not at all, sure at all. But, I mean, he's obviously being bullied in the most horrific and horrendous fashion. And you do wonder whether it might have been better for him to actually go to court and go to jail, because this is almost a continuous torture going on of him. And, you know, who knows, maybe he would have been out by now. He would have served his 5 years or something. I know it sounds awful, but, you know, There doesn't seem to be any end to this, and he's quite obviously being, you know, a crucified, really. We've just had Easter, haven't we? That's what they've done to Julian.
I know a man who might know how he's doing. I'll get in touch with him. I'm thinking of former CIA officer Ray McGovern. Ray will be in touch with Julian Assange's wife. So, I might drop Ray a line. In fact, it's been a long time since he was on this program. It's about time I got in touch with him. Tony, thanks again for today, and good luck at the conference. If you bump into Julian Petley when you're there, you might do, from Brunel. Say that Richie Allen said hello to him. He's a great guy, Julian. Cheers, T. Bye for now. Thank you, buddy. The great Tony Gosling, live on Monday's Richie Allen radio show.